Hello everyone, I am Mirta Hurtado Rivas. No VIPs or rock stars, just simple people sharing their life stories to trigger discussions around important topics, or simply to inspire us to embrace challenges ourselves. Welcome to Leaderching. Hello everyone, and welcome back to Leaderching. I'm very excited to receive today as a guest Livia Velázquez Castañeda, who is someone that I met via the podcast. So you see, we have gotten as far as actually now connecting with people that heard about the podcast and then learned about the initiative that we are driving. Lydia is a cat and coffee lover, but she also has a profession as an IP lawyer. Welcome so much, Lydia, to our podcast.
Thank you so much, Mirta, for having me. I'm really excited about this interview today.
Excellent. We are excited to have you here and for you to share a little bit about you and your experience so far, even though you're still a very young woman. Obviously, you have already gone through some experiences, good and bad, probably. But let me start with the first question that is always the same for all my guests. I'm curious to know what you wanted to become when you were a child.
Well, that's a really good question because I consider two facts during my childhood that they led me to decide to study law. The first was quite curious, in my opinion, because I was a kid around 6 years old, and I was in an elementary school, and I had these citizenship lessons, and I remember I really enjoy to memorize the constitution articles. It is a little bit awkward for a six-year-old kid. But to be honest, I enjoy it. And well, the second thing that I could consider really the trigger for me was losing our house when I was a kid, around 12. This is obviously not a happy event in my life, but we had a familiar dispute. And at the end, I remember by that time, some lawyers came to our house to talk to my parents, trying to help, but at the end they couldn't, and we lost our house and we had to move to another house. And that was probably the moment that I think, oh, lawyers are good people and they fight for justice. And I want to become a lawyer then. And I guess the combination of those two characteristics were important to me to decide to study law.
Excellent. That's actually interesting because I think that you're pairing like a very early on curiosity about, you know, the Constitution or like just, you know, very formal things, right, that are normally not the first thing that you think about as a kid. But let me ask you the following question. Were you into books already when you were a child? Did you like reading?
Yes, and my mom was really strict with that. And I liked reading when I was a kid. I liked reading, and I remember that my grandmother gave me one book as a present, and I still have it at my home. So, reading habits are good for developing maybe some interest in law later.
Excellent. I think that I've come across both types of lawyers, those that had nothing to do with literature or books, but were more driven by, you know, what we see in movies, like a lawyer that, you know, that becomes famous and makes quite a bit of money. And then there is others that that come more from like kind of very from an environment that where there was already a lot of reading and a lot of curiosity also that is enticed by the books you read, right? So you want to know more. So it's kind of one is becomes avid for knowledge, and hence, in my view, that is quite a good basis for then afterwards choosing such a broad profession like lawyer, right? Because it's quite broad, actually, and we'll come to this in a little bit, because I would like to understand from you, so you decide to become a lawyer, but what drives you to what you're doing today? So what happened in between the decision that was triggered also by an unhappy event, which I think it's also important to kind of share, right, with our listeners, is that sometimes there is also bad things shaping our decisions, and that isn't bad overall, but obviously the moment when we go through those experiences are not necessarily easy ones. So what happens from that moment that you decide until more or less today that you're doing something that I will not disclose because I think it's really interesting?
Well, when I started the bachelor degree for this unhappy event, I wanted to practice civil law. And I was really clear about that. But in the meantime, the tax law was interesting for me as well. So I even started studying more in a more emphatic way tax law. But at the very end of the bachelor degree, maybe in the 9 or 10 semester, I had a professor. I had this corporate law lessons, and some professor mentioned that intellectual property was really important for some corporations, and all trademarks, patents, copyright, domain names. And that was the moment that I started looking for something related with IP law. And I went to the Mexican office and I asked for a trainee program. And well, that was the moment when I started really focusing on intellectual property. That's how I landed for some reason in IP, in the IP field.
Excellent. And I think to me, that's really interesting. Because so in my time, which is already a bit further away than your studying times, actually there was no intellectual property course specifically, right? Intellectual property was a small part of another course, but we didn't have like properly an intellectual property course. And I had decided I wanted to do international public law. So work in international organizations, go, you know, the diplomatic route and so on. But I ended up like you, my first job in intellectual property was as a trademark examiner at the Swiss office. So you see, you know, that's really an experience that we share. So you work there. Can you tell us, you know, and I'm sure this was not your only experience having managers and having leaders around you. Can you maybe share with us what you think are important characteristics of a person that manages people, or that even in some cases we can call leaders?
Yeah, well, that's a really good question. And thanks for sharing your experience as well. It's quite interesting. So we share one experience in our lives. For me, a leader should have so many characteristics, but mainly, to be honest, people who encourage others to pursue their dreams, for me, that's a leader. Because many people talk about some skills and or maybe people that it's really approachable, that I guess for experience, I would say that being approachable is one characteristic of leaders, but not the main characteristic. And for me, a leader should be a good listener as well. People who stand up for the projects, the ideas they have, that they are open for new ideas as well. In my opinion, those are characteristic in common in leaders.
So, Lydia, I think you're touching on so many important points, and some of these are really difficult, right? So I think being a good listener is not only difficult, it's something that we have to kind of force ourselves again and again to do, because especially when you start having some experience and knowing better your field of practice, you become like very comfortable and you assume that you understand the other person when she or he is speaking to you. And I think for me, that's always a big risk because, for instance, I've been now almost, maybe I shouldn't say this, but almost 20 years in IP. And so what I experience is that I believe that I get a certain comfort of knowing that I have gone through many similar cases or similar circumstances or events. And hence, I am foreseeing what the problem is or what the issue is that someone is talking about to me. And I think it's really a very important skill that we need to refresh over and over to actually be capable of really listening, right? In our days, with the fact that we are spending so much time on virtual setups, where we are participating in a call, but at the same time looking at our phone or maybe answering an email, or there is some other stuff that we are looking into what's happening on the screen with the different faces that we are seeing. I
Yeah.
think it's even more important to be a good listener. I think what I liked about the other points that you mentioned is, and you mentioned this is the first one, which is something I really like, is encourage others. I think encouraging others is not that easy, right? Because it also means that you need to work on who is going to replace you, right? So at some point when you are leading a team, if you encourage your team members and if they want to become you, not you as a person, but have the same role, then what you are doing is you are training them to be capable to take over at some point, or a similar role within the same company or somewhere else. But there is always, I know a lot of people are scared about their own associates becoming better, or in their view, better than themselves. And then, so to say, being scared of being pushed out of their own position. And I think to me, that's a risky thing to think about development of people like that, because at the end of the day, to me at least, it's always so great to experience when my former associates become managers themselves, or when they get to the senior roles because that's where they wanted to specialize in. And I believe that what better result of one owns management to see that people succeed in doing what achieving what they want, right? So encouraging, I think you need to be a bit selfless, so not scared about competition, right? And on
Yeah.
the other hand, encouragement for me means translates into being there. You have to be supportive. You have to then, as you said, be approachable, right? You need to be someone who people can talk to in order to get to the point where you can encourage others to pursue dreams. And I think I like the word dreams because often enough, when we speak about work, we have a tendency, especially as lawyers, to say, do you know this law, this law, this law? Have you studied this, legislation? Have you exercised and practiced in this country? Whereas actually your dreams can have something to do with that, but most of the times are much broader than that, right? It's not only about your kind of educational skills, but it's a lot about also your feelings, your environment, how you feel in a specific position. So let me understand. So you go to the Mexican IP office, you work there. What happens next?
Well, I worked there for 7 years. First of all, in the examiner position, and I was there for some years. And I consider myself someone that like to learn. So at some point, I decided to ask for an opportunity in the infringement department. And then I moved to the infringement department, where I work as well with so many colleagues and people that are amazing because, you know, sometimes offices are really full of work and you have to accomplish as well some goals and that are set not by you. You have a lot of work working for the government. And in that area, I was traveling mainly to the customs and checking for some infringement and counterfeit products. And that was really amazing for me because that made me feel that work at that time made me feel useful for the society. Like, oh, Lydia, you're contributing to get a better economy without those fake products in the market. And to be honest, that was an amazing area and time to work in the Mexican office. I really had a nice time there.
That's really fantastic. And, you know, obviously, I'm probably biased totally because one of my favorite topics is anti-counterfeiting. I think irrespective of which industry you're in, I think the fact that you can contribute to keep people safe, to protect the consumer, it's a very driving element for me to be passionate about that. And I think that you mentioned the other side of anti-counterfeiting, which is very important in emerging markets. And so I know this by my Peruvian part of my nationality. I know that, for instance, in Latin America, we are still struggling a lot with that, where our economy is still very much on the gray market and where we still have a lot of counterfeited products on the market. And hence, obviously, there is a lot of issues with respect to tax evasion and other impacts on society, and hence, obviously, not very productive, but rather counterproductive to the development of a more solid economy. So that's very interesting. So I can hear also as well that about what you said first when you said, I decided to study law because this is something that good people do. And also it's something that, you know, it's seeking for justice, right? So you have this justice element there. And now when I hear to you that you felt proud to be able to contribute to you know, improve the situation in your country by working in this area, it also has a social connotation. So I feel very strongly this coming from you. So now you are doing this, working in the infringement department. What happens next?
Well, and at some point, I decided to change to a law firm. And now, I think that working for a law firm helped me in a huge way as well. I mean, mentally talking, because at the law firm, I started experience something different. Well, first of all, you have to talk with clients. And my colleagues, it was a full service law firm. And some of my colleagues inspired me as well at some point. Some of them were studying master degrees in UK, Melbourne, the US, and I started dreaming about studying abroad in the IP firm. And there are so many differences between working for the government and working for the private practice. But at the same time, both of them complement each other in a really nice way. In my experience, working in the law firm has been so enriching in my professional career.
Excellent. You have mentioned now, you know, being inspired by others, you know, having, you know, people that have, you know, also driven you to do more, to learn more, to change also when you were at the Mexican IP office. I wonder, you know, that one of the topics that we talk about very often in LeaderChing is gender equality. And I would like to hear from you because you have had the, you know, the experience with government authorities and now then you move to private practice. Do we still need to talk about gender equality in Mexico? And if so, what do you think could have an impact?
That's a good question because in my opinion, we have still a big path to accomplish in gender equity. From the perspective of the law firm, I could say then for my experience and sadly, I haven't seen so many partners, female partners on IP firms, at least in Mexico City, that is the city that I've work in the legal field. And in the Mexican office, at least in this infringement area, not many women as well, because could be at some point kind of risky going to those visits, inspections, and looking for some fake products could be dangerous for women at some point. Obviously, it's sad for me that I don't see this gender equity that I see here in Europe, for instance. So we have in Mexico some work to do in this topic.
Thank you. I think I remember, and maybe I want to share this, and obviously this is already some time ago, but I worked for a little while in Peru, and I was asked to go to deliver a writ to a distant part, you know, a city that was mining, a mining city in the mountains. And I remember that then I offered to go because I was an intern and I wanted to experience that, right? I wanted to learn. And then my boss said, well, yes, you can go, but you cannot go alone. You need to go with someone else. And I understood that because for sure, you know, at the end of the 90s, Peru was not the safest place. And there is some risk involved. But the funny thing about the story was that the person that they sent with me was also a very young lawyer. And then that got sick during the entire trip due to the height, right? Because we had to go very high up in the mountains. So actually I ended up not only taking care of me and the writ and making sure, because then the bus that we had taken broke down and I had to hire, you know, someone passing and saying we need to go there, otherwise we have to come back all the way. So it was a fantastic experience for me. And but I always remember, you know, them saying, yeah, you have to go with someone. And at the end, then the someone was the one thing that I had to worry most about during the entire trip. And I fully understand that things can be more risky for women, totally. I just wonder if we apply the same caution, you know, and if we give the same advice. Because at the end of the day, I fully concur with you. When you do actually seize products or go to identify fake products, in many countries, it's a risky undertaking, but it's risky as well for men. It's not like it's not risky for them. It's also risky for them. It might be a bit more risky for women, but the question is always that I ask myself is, what are we doing as a society to enable women to be in the same position as men to actually do their jobs, right? So is there anything we can contribute to? Is there any things that we can put in place to allow women to have access to the same jobs, and yes, with the same level of risk, right? Because risk is probably part of those jobs. But thanks for sharing that. I think when it comes to Europe, yes, I think at first sight here, it's more advanced in a lot of respects, but I believe we still have to do a lot of work here too. It's not really automatic or a given to see female partners to the same extent that we see male partners. And then also when we go to the industry, it's still a lot of industries, actually their boards don't include many women. So we still have a lot of decision-making being done by males. And that doesn't mean that's a bad decision-making. It just means that we are excluding half of the rest of the population that might bring some additional thoughts and diversity to the options that are considered. So I still think we need to discuss about it. So once you did, you know, so you were inspired when you were working at a law firm, you saw others going elsewhere. So what happens next then?
Well, the COVID come to our lives and made me think about my life. So I guess for many people that was a situation, or they lived a similar situation like me, because as we were not able to go outside, for many people like me, it was like thinking about my own life. And I ask myself, what would I have liked to do if I die tomorrow? And I'm not afraid to death, but that question was in my mind. And during the lockdown, it was like a dark period, I could say, when I only talked to my cats and not many contact with other friends or colleagues or anyone else. So in 2015 that I started working for law firms, looking around my other colleagues or my peers studying abroad, at that moment I was thinking, oh, could be interesting for me at some point to studying abroad as well. But the dream was there. And only with COVID and thinking about that, maybe that made me think, what if you do it? That COVID hard time encouraged me to pursue that dream. And I start looking for some IP LLM programs. And I applied, and they accepted me.
Excellent. I think what you say certainly is going to be common to a lot of people listening to this, because I know that we started this podcast during COVID because of the need for sharing experiences, but also because a lot of people were in this phase of introspection, right? Mm. What is it I'm doing? Am I living the life I want to live? Am I devoting? I'm allocating my time to the right priorities in my life. And I think for many, especially if you were kind of in a situation where you had to face alone time, the first question that comes up obviously is, am I doing really what I want, or am I missing on something that I would like to do? So I think it's, for me, I think the advice that I like to share with others is, and I see this also in my work environment, it's actually that it's always good to take time for introspection. It's always good to pause. So I have my own kind of little kind of ritual. Every end of the year, I ask myself, not so much to find New Year's resolution, but just much more to check in with myself and say, do I still have the same priorities, and am I following those priorities? Because sometimes you have priorities or dreams and they remain that. There are just new words because you have decided that's what you want, but you're not doing anything to get there.
Mm-hmm.
So I like doing that. And, you know, it can be whenever, but for me, it's like towards the end of the year when so many things come, like, you know, due to our way of, you know, celebrating the end of the year and everything, it's always a good time for me to say, tell myself, okay, so are you happy with what you did this year? Or are you regretting not having done certain things? And what is it that teaches you for tomorrow? And I think in the professional life, it's similar. It's about sometimes we get very comfy and we're like, okay, I'm doing this job, I like it, it's interesting, you know. And then the question is this still what I want to do? And is still this what I want to experience, right? So
it's really interesting that you mentioned that, because I do the same introspection exercise with myself, but close to my birthday. And
that's a good one too.
Yeah. So at the beginning of this month, at the beginning of the month of August, was my birthday. So I did it recently.
That's excellent. That's actually a good idea. I must say, I probably don't do that during my birthday, because as I get older, it's a different vibe. It's a different vibe. Like, I think when you're younger, it's like, yeah. But then once you start getting older, maybe it's kind of, you know, it's a little bit more weird for me. We're getting to the end of our conversation, Lydia. And thank you so much for, you know, sharing all those events, very personal, some of those that have led you to pursue your dreams in as a lawyer in IP, to do this, you know, introspection during COVID, and then ending up pursuing one of the dreams you had.
Mm-hmm.
If you look back a couple of years, I will not say like to my other guests 20 years, because you're probably too young for 20 years back, but if you look back and if you could talk to yourself,
mm-hmm.
right, is there any particular advice that you would give the younger Lydia with respect to life in general, right?
Mm-hmm. I would say, don't worry too much about small things, Lydia. Because sometimes I consider myself like really strict with myself. And probably I would say as well, be more confident, Lydia.
So I think you have touched upon two extremely important points. And I think, you know, when you say don't worry about the small things, it seems such a straightforward statement, right? It seems so easy, right? Stop worrying about small things. We all know that it's the small things that make us grow crazy, right? That bothers. But I think in particular, if you combine that with your second statement, which is don't be as strict as you are, I think that's something that I struggle a lot. So I am my biggest critic. I am so tough on myself. And sometimes I just wonder why, you know, and there, we probably would need to do another entire podcast series to figure out that.
For
but
sure.
I think there is kind of this expectation, right, that we are probably raised with to a certain extent, that our environment gives us, and that leads us to be so really tough on ourselves. I think a lot of my female mentees in particular, the one thing that I always tell them is like, if something happens, please, you know, just try to think about what your best friend would tell you. Because actually that's the same love that you should display towards yourself. You wouldn't tell your best friend, you're such a loser, why did it happen? Couldn't you do it better? It's such a simple thing. You know, how comes? But your best friend would say, hey, come on, take it easy, right? This is in the context of things, this is one small thing and you can fix it in some way. So I think for me, this this is really important. It's try to find a way to obviously be strict, you know, or be demanding. I think it's always a good thing to strive to do things the best way we can in our private and professional life, but then also to have the candor and empathy that we expect from ourselves for others. We should try to have that for ourselves too.
Yeah. Be strict, but not in an excess way. And give or provide to yourself with kind words as well. That's really nice.
Well, thank you so much, Lydia. I think there is no better words to close this conversation. find kind words for oneself. It seems like great advice. I would like to thank you once more for being part of this, and also, you know, for connecting with me via the podcast, which I think it's a really nice thing that happened now, is for me to expanding actually the network of people interested in similar things via this initiative. And I wish you all the best in the continuation. I know that you concluded your master now successfully. So congrats again on that.
Thank you so much. No, and thank you for having me. I'm really, really glad to be with you talking and in this way, sharing some ideas. And I hope that the audience can enjoy a little bit of our conversation.
Well, thanks so much, Lydia, once again, to all of you listening to us. Please don't forget to subscribe to our podcast that you can find on all major platforms. Take care, and I hope to see many of you soon face to face. Bye. Bye, Lydia.
Bye.
I hope you liked this episode of LeaderCing in English. Don't forget to give us a thumbs up on your respective platform and subscribe to our podcast. See you soon!